Hello, my name is Joe Schwartz, and I would like to take a moment to tell you about my podcast. It's called Still Unknown, and it's a podcast dealing exclusively with unsolved murders, disappearances, unexplained deaths, and other unsolved mysteries. If you are a fan of the classic TV show Unsolved Mysteries, then you'll definitely want to check out my podcast, as many episodes deal with cases featured on the show that still need answers. So look for Still Unknown on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you are listening to this podcast here. And let's solve some mysteries together.
Hey guys, it's Joss from Maple Flavored Murder, and I just wanted to take a quick minute to let you know about my podcast. If you're interested in diving into some Canadian true crime, well, this is perfect for you. Check it out on Instagram at Maple Flavored Murder and listen to new episodes every Monday wherever you listen to your podcasts. See you then.
Welcome to Forensic Miles. My name is Miles.
Hey guys, it's Sean.
I just wanted to say a quick thank you to all of our listeners. We are so lucky to have you, and we feel so honored that you come back and listen to our stories every week. We hope that you love listening as much as we love creating the episodes. For all of our new listeners, welcome. We are so excited that you guys are here. Forensic Miles is the unofficial companion podcast to the cult favorite show Forensic Files. You've seen the show, you know the crime, but is there more to the story?
Typically so.
Yes, typically so. And that is the case for this week's episode. Although not much has been updated since the episode came out, although it is a very interesting one. And it is the Forensic Files episode called A Cinderella Story. And I think at the end of this episode, we should kind of talk about this name because I'm not a huge fan of it.
Yeah, it wasn't really what I was expecting when I saw the title.
No, not at all. I definitely feel like they might have missed the mark on this one. Actually, not might have. I think that they definitely missed the mark on this one. So this episode covers the murder and rape of Janet Ciclari. Let's just jump right into it. In August 1993, Robert Ciclari, Janet Ciclari, Celeste Bathman, and Nancy Matt headed to their favorite vacation spot, Outer Banks, North Carolina. Have you ever been there, Sean?
I have not, but I see all the OBX stickers everywhere.
I have also never been to Outer Banks, but I do know that it is an extremely popular vacation spot with millions of people going there each year. And it honestly sounds like a beautiful, amazing, relaxing, fun place to go on vacation.
Yeah. I definitely would check it out.
Yeah. And that's exactly what they did. Robert and Janet were actually siblings, and they had been going to Outer Banks with their family on vacation since they were children. So this was kind of a little bit of a tradition for them. So it was really exciting. The original plan was to spend a week in Southern Shores, but the friends decided to head to Nags Island for an extra day of relaxation, and they ended up checking into a hotel called the Carolinian Hotel, which is actually no longer standing. Uh-huh. I think it was torn down.
Well, what, 25 years ago? 26 years ago?
Mm-hmm. On the night of August 28th, 1993, Robert, Janet, Celeste, and Nancy had spent the day relaxing, spending time on the beach, swimming, and enjoying their time together. Janet had just recently had kind of a big breakup. She had been dating this guy for about 10 years, and they finally decided to call it quits. You know, what they said about what Janet's friend said about her in the Forensic Files episode is that she was really looking for Mr. Perfect. She wanted her Prince Charming. She wanted true love. And this relationship just never ended up being that. So she decided to end it and move on and try and find the person that she really wanted to spend the rest of her life with. So this was kind of an exciting trip for her.
I guess Outer Banks is a good start to start searching.
Yeah. They all went to dinner together, followed by a trip to a local comedy club. After the club, Robert decided to call it a night and headed back to the hotel room. The girls weren't ready to end the night, and they decided to head to a bar called Port O'Call Restaurant and Gaslight Saloon. And they, you know, they were all in very high spirits. They were still really excited. And when they got there, they ended up running into a man that they had actually met earlier that day, Edward Reed Powell. He was the bartender at the Carolinian Hotel, and they had spent actually quite a bit of time earlier that day kind of hanging out and chatting. So they were excited to see him that he was there. He was there with his girlfriend. Earlier that day, when Reed had met Janet, they had immediately clicked and were chatting, and Janet's friends say that she seemed to be flirting with him, and they were just really getting along. So they were very excited, like I said before, to see him there on this kind of chance encounter. Soon, Celeste and Nancy wanted to head back to the hotel, but Janet was still having fun and she wanted to stay and continue chatting with Reed. Celeste and Nancy decided that they would leave the car with Janet and walk home together, feeling that it would be more safe for them to walk home together and leave the car with Janet. Now, I don't want to say any judgment to the decisions that these girls made because nothing actually happens, but leaving your friend in a bar in a city that you don't know with somebody that you don't really know,
right?
It could have gone a very different way. So don't leave your friends at bars.
Yeah, I know they're all like adults, but still, if I was on vacation, I don't think I'd be able to just stay by myself somewhere. If everybody else wanted to go home, I would just end the night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But they wanted to leave and Janet wanted to stay, and so that's what they did. And clearly Janet felt comfortable with Reed, and she felt comfortable with the decision. So she was there with Reed. Later in the night, a situation kind of happened, and Reed had seen his girlfriend dancing with another man. A fight ensued, and they parted ways. Reed's girlfriend kind of left the situation, and Reed ended up staying and talking to Janet. When they decided to leave the bar at around 2 a.m., Reed said that he was going to catch a taxi, but Janet basically said, you know, nonsense. She knew that Reed lived on the way to the hotel, so she offered to give him a ride, and she ended up giving him one. When she arrived back at her hotel, she poked her head into the hotel room, which she actually shared with her brother, Robert. She dropped her purse off, she took her shoes off, and she grabbed some cigarettes. She told her brother that she was going to head out to the beach to smoke. Unfortunately, that was the last time anybody saw Janet alive. At dawn the next morning, a woman's body was found on the beach.
Oh no.
It was found by a sanitation worker. She was naked from the waist down, only wearing a denim blue top and clutching a pair of white denim shorts to her chest. Investigators were soon able to identify the body as 35-year-old Janet Ciclari. And it's kind of haunting. I read in this article from the blog Forensic Files Now that Robert had woken up to see that his sister wasn't in the bed. And, you know, he was kind of wondering about that. And he looked out of his window and he saw police out there.
Oh, gosh.
Because Janet was only found about 10 yards from the entrance of her hotel room.
Oh, wow. The hotel, like, connected right to the beach.
Yeah, so the hotel was beachfront, and there was, like, a little, like, wooden walkway that went down to the beach. And I'll get into that a little bit later, but the exit from the hotel to that walkway was literally next door to her hotel room. It was like connected to it, but we'll get into that a bit later. Janet had been stabbed multiple times on the side of her neck, the side of her face, and her jaw. her hands, and she had a deep cut on her throat. She had also been raped. So this was an extremely terrifying, violent attack.
Yeah.
And it was clear that she had tried to defend herself, but unfortunately, she was not able to escape.
It's terrible. While on vacation, nonetheless.
Exactly. The autopsy showed that Janet had died from blood loss due to the cut on her neck, and which had severed her jugular vein. Supposedly, there was blood spanning 25 feet in either direction, leading investigators to believe that Janet had actually survived the attack and tried to make her way back to the hotel, but ended up succumbing to the wounds and dying of blood loss.
Oh my gosh.
It's haunting.
Imagine that.
Absolutely haunting. She was so close. And with those neck injuries too, I mean, she probably wouldn't have been able to make a sound.
Yeah.
There wasn't much evidence, but investigators were able to find a pair of men's white tennis shoes with gray socks stuffed into them about 30 yards from the body. They felt that they had to be involved in some way. Like, there was no way that there would just be this random pair of shoes left on the beach right next to a dead body. Like, they felt that it would be way too much of a coincidence.
Yeah, definitely weird to find a pair of shoes that close to the body. Especially, you know, that late at night, everybody would have already, like, cleaned up and gotten all their stuff off of the beach from, you know, the day.
Exactly. The police decided not to tell the public how Janet had been killed, hoping that, you know, somewhere down the line, they would be able to, you know, be able to pinpoint the murderer based on some information that they gave them.
I feel like they should just do that, like, in every investigation.
Yeah.
Although I know it's the media, but they get a hold of things. But yeah. Still, I feel like the less they know, that's just going to help out everybody, every case.
Exactly. But I think it can be really challenging sometimes, like you said. When they questioned Robert about the night before, he said that he thought Janet might have been with somebody when she arrived back at the hotel. He said that he thought that he heard whispering outside of the hotel room, but he was asleep when she came in. So he was kind of in that weird, like, just when you wake up, yeah, you don't really know what's going on. You know somebody's coming in your room, and that's a little bit weird. So, you know, there was no way to know for sure whether or not she had actually brought somebody home with her. Unfortunately, like I said before, Robert was the last person to see her alive. Now, you would initially think, oh, hey, you know, she had to have walked through the hotel lobby to get back out to the beach. But this is where what I said before comes into play. She didn't actually have to walk through the lobby because the exit to the beach was right outside of her door. So Robert really was the last person to, I'm not even sure he saw her, but he could pinpoint exactly where she was at a specific time.
Yeah, I was going to say, it seems odd that she would go in and drop her stuff off and then go back out versus just like having one last smoke and then just going in for the night. But I guess if her hotel room was like that easily accessible and had a better spot like on the beach, then I guess I'd do the same.
Yeah, for sure. And she probably wanted to drop off her purse, and she wanted to take her sandals off, go down and sit on the beach for a little while. And, like, keep in mind, too, we're talking about maybe 2:30, 3:30 in the morning. Nobody's out. It's dark. Like, nobody is there. She just wanted to go for one last peaceful smoke. I mean, this was the last day of her vacation. She was probably just trying to, you know, relax for as long as she possibly could.
Yeah, can't blame her.
Mm-mm. Investigators then learn about Reed, and they decide to question him about what had happened the night before and, you know, what had happened when Janet's friends left them alone together.
And even once she dropped him off at home.
Exactly. Reed said that after Janet dropped him off at his apartment, he went in, grabbed his keys, hopped in his car, and headed to his girlfriend's house to see if they could kind of resolve the situation and make up for the argument that they had had earlier that evening. And guess where his girlfriend lived?
By the hotel?
She actually lived at the Carolinian Hotel.
Oh.
His girlfriend was a waitress there, and they kind of offered their staff a place to live. So she was working at the Carolinian and also living there. So Reed basically hopped in his car and drove to the Carolinian Hotel. He said that while he was waiting for his girlfriend to arrive home, because she wasn't actually home when he arrived, he was sitting in his car eating a stick of pepperoni with a kitchen knife.
Seems weird.
Yeah.
To just have those things in his car.
Yeah. I mean, he must have gone in the house, grabbed the stick of salami and a knife, and then brought it with him. But it's very strange, especially because Reed was sitting in a car 100 yards from where the murder scene was, and Janet was killed with a knife.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it doesn't look good for Reed.
No, this absolutely stood out to police, and they wanted to know more about what happened and who Reed was, you know? Anyway, Reed said that he had actually seen Janet pull up in her car, which I find really strange because
she dropped him off.
Yeah, she dropped him off. And what he's saying is that he would have had enough time to go into his house, grab his keys, his stick of salami, a knife, get back in his car, and then drive to the Carolinian before Janet arrived.
I mean, I know he's a local and all, but I doubt there could have been that big of a shortcut to get him there before her.
No, it's definitely strange, and I think he's kind of insinuating that he was sitting there a while before he saw her arrive. So maybe she got lost. I mean, there's no way to know for sure.
Yeah.
She could have gotten lost. I mean, she wasn't a local. She was driving at 2 a.m. No cell phones.
Yeah.
GPS. She's probably looking at a map. So, I mean, it's possible.
Could have stopped at the gas station.
Yeah, for sure. There's plenty of, different things that could have happened. But unfortunately, we won't know for sure. He said that he didn't wave at her or make any contact with her when he saw her come in. And she just walked right into the building. Reed said later his girlfriend arrived home and he went to talk to her. I think they were actually talking in the parking lot. I don't think he ever entered her hotel room or her room, but I'm not sure about that. The conversation didn't go well at all, in fact. Reed actually ended up smacking her in the face.
Oh.
I mean, speaking of bad relationships that you need to get out of.
Yeah, definitely.
The two once again parted ways. She went back to her room and he went home. Reed was obviously the prime suspect. I mean, the evidence seemed to be stacking up against him. He was clearly attracted to Janet. They had already shown signs that there was something, you know, some spark there. And he showed that he had clear anger issues. I mean, he got into two fights with his girlfriend that night and ended up smacking her in the face. So, you know, there's something there. And on top of all of that, he's sitting in a car with a knife yards away from where Janet was killed at approximately the same time.
Yeah.
So, well,
if he was going to go there too, why would he have had Janet drop him off versus just saying, oh yeah, I'm actually going to go talk to my girlfriend. I'll just go back to the hotel with you.
Well, I don't know. I mean, he could have thought, hey, maybe this won't go well. Maybe I should have my car so I can go home if it doesn't go well.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I don't know. But it is definitely weird that he wouldn't have told Janet that he was going to go there to see his girlfriend. But you know, that might also go back to the fact that they were clearly attracted to each other. Maybe he just didn't want to talk about his girlfriend.
Yeah, that's true.
Unfortunately, the next day, something happened that completely changed the investigation and really almost put it at risk of not being solved. The day after Janet's body was found, Hurricane Emily hit the island, and it hit it hard. There was an evacuation of the island and thousands of people were leaving to protect themselves from the hurricane. So investigators were immediately like, great. I mean, what they have here is a murder in a vacation town. It could have been anybody. It could have been a local, but it also could have been a vacationer. No. And if they leave, how would they ever be able to find them again?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to lose their potential suspect pool and then also, like, and the crime scene.
Exactly. The crime scene was completely lost. Everything was destroyed, and approximately 80,000 people were evacuated. Investigators really felt that they were about to lose their chance to solve the murder. But the one person that decided not to evacuate, it was Reed.
Ugh.
Reed ended up staying. And this kind of gave investigators this chance to question him further. They served a search warrant for his home, and they collected all of his kitchen knives. After testing, they all came back clear. There were no signs of blood. Which, you know, could mean he didn't put the kitchen knife back in his kitchen. Completely understandable. However, his DNA was also taken, and it was compared to the DNA taken from Janet's rape test kit. Mm. And much to the surprise of all of the investigators, there was no match.
Huh.
So they had to write Reed off, and they were once again kind of at this place where they had no idea where to look and felt that this case might go cold.
Yeah, it seemed like he was just like...
absolutely the person who was going to do it.
Yeah, I mean, he was like always around. He just seemed to like be there and like everywhere. Mm-hmm. At the bar that night, at the hotel later that night.
Had a night.
Like, yeah.
Yes. And that's what they felt, too. They were really genuinely surprised when it came back as a no match. They discovered that Janet had had contact with 10 other men while on her vacation. So each of these men were tracked down. Their DNA was tested and taken and compared to the sample. None of them matched. Supposedly, and I read this in that Forensic Files Now blog, which I have linked in this episode, Reed's girlfriend, as well as Janet's ex-boyfriend, were also looked at for a time. In the blog, they said that Reed's girlfriend had not only gotten into an argument with Robert when he had gotten his food... basically, what happened is that at the restaurant, she was his waitress, and Robert returned his food.
Mm.
And that didn't bode well with her, and some argument kind of ensued. Also, she had noticed the bond that Reed was making with Janet, and it could have been jealousy.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's a very interesting situation. And obviously, we can't tell how she would have felt during that. But some sort of situation occurred with her and Robert. However, because Janet was sexually assaulted, she was raped,
yeah,
they kind of didn't believe that it was a woman that would have done this.
Right.
I mean, at least not the rape.
Not yet.
They also looked at Janet's ex-boyfriend, and he actually seemed kind of promising, as he had served time in prison for accessory to murder, but he was also ultimately cleared. As the leads started to die out, so did the hope that they would ever find the killer. Months turned into years, and people, friends, investigators believed that the case would go unsolved. But during the 5 years the case was cold, there was some kind of movement. The Combined DNA Index System had been created, otherwise known as CODIS. In 1997, investigators decided to run the DNA sample that was obtained from the rape test kit. Amazingly, they got a match. Now, this isn't typical, at least at this point in time, this was not typical. DNA sample and get a cold hit, like that was rare at this point. And by this point, I mean in 2007 when the Forensic Files episode came out, not 1997 when CODIS was created, because that definitely would have been rare.
Yeah.
So the match came back to a man named Thomas Berry. He was a fisherman, he did some roofing, and he was a convicted rapist.
Mm.
Berry had a lengthy conviction record that included the rape of a 12-year-old girl.
Oh.
Which he had actually been sentenced to 10 years in prison for.
10 years in prison?
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not sure that he even actually did the full 10-year sentence.
Wow. And how old was he at that time? Did it ever say?
I think he was in his 30s, but I can't be 100% sure.
Jeez.
He's actually interviewed in this episode of Forensic Files, and I highly encourage you to watch it because he is a very interesting fellow. But in his interview, he says, and I quote, "She wasn't 12, she was 14. I got the paperwork," end quote. Like,
that doesn't make it any better.
Yeah, how does that, there's no difference. And then he goes on to say that it was, quote, "all consensual." Like, no. The answer is no. A 12-year-old, a 13-year-old, a 14-year-old, 17, 16, it's not consent.
Yeah.
There, you cannot get consent from a child. Anyway, when police found him, he was in prison for a parole violation of this crime that he was convicted of raping the 12-year-old girl. And it's actually the reason that his DNA had been put into CODIS. When he broke his parole and he was put back in prison, they took his DNA sample then and plopped it into the...
They didn't have CODIS, like, when he originally went to prison?
Nope. So, CODIS, his DNA was put into CODIS in 2016, so right before they ran the sample. Sorry, I meant to say 1996, not 2016. Anyway, during his questioning, he was shown pictures of Janet and asked if he had seen her. At first, he said no, but then later, after being questioned and, you know, so forth, he admitted that he, quote, vaguely remembered her. Again, in the Forensic Files episode, he has another fascinating quote, and he says, quote, "I had to have had sex with Janet. I mean, that's obvious from the DNA, but it had to be consensual. I would never have killed nobody," he said. And here's another quote. "I had sex with a lot of people on the beach. I wouldn't have any idea, you know, if we met that way and just started walking and talking and one thing led to another. I've had that happen several times in my life. As a matter of fact, my first wife and I met that way," end quote.
This guy's a character.
I mean, yeah.
He's something. He's a piece of work.
Absolutely. During the initial questioning, he said that he didn't remember if he had had sex with her or raped her since he was high on cocaine, but he did not admit to anything. But the investigation clearly showed that the sex was not consensual and that she had been raped and then murdered. However, there was really no way for them to prove that the same person that raped her had also murdered her. So they were still kind of unable to, without a reasonable doubt, say that he did it. There had been approximately a dozen other survivors of sexual assault perpetrated by Thomas, including one that had been raped on a beach. So it's starting to kind of show he's got an MO, he's got history with this kind of a crime. Thomas had, like I said before, already admitted that during this period of time, he was most likely on drugs. He was high on crack and marijuana. And he felt like if he was out there on the beach that night, he was definitely high. Janet's friends and family basically said that there was no way that she would have had sex with a random person she had just met. Like I said before, Janet was looking for a strong relationship, someone that she could build a life with, spend the rest of her life with, and not just a summer fling. Like, there's no way she would have just met a man on a beach and then just had sex with him right then and there.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's clear that the sex was not consensual. They turned back to that pair of tennis shoes that they had found 30 yards from Janet's body. They really felt that this piece of evidence must have some answers that they needed. Thomas said that he recognized the shoes and that he remembered having a similar pair, but this specific pair of shoes were not his. They turned to a forensic expert and his, you know, expertise were in matching barefoot impressions with shoes. So basically, like, you know, when you're walking around, your foot has a very unique pattern that is left on your shoe sole by the sweat from your foot.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's got to be some tough science for to figure out shoe print impressions or footprint impressions.
And smelly.
And smelly. Ugh, gross.
Be around feet.
Gross.
He got 8 impressions of Thomas's feet, cut out the soles of the tennis shoes, and compared them. He concluded that Thomas was the likely wearer of the tennis shoes. So this really gave the investigators kind of that ammunition that they needed to connect him both to the rape and the murder. Barry's ex-girlfriend also confirmed that the shoes belonged to him, saying that she had seen them before, seen him wearing them before, and knew that they were his, basically. She also said that he was often carrying a fishing knife. She stated that 98% of the time he had a knife in his pocket.
It's great for somebody high on drugs.
Yeah. Yeah. During the trial, survivors of Barry's attacks came forward and testified, which I think is absolutely amazing. Shelley Perry stated that in 1992, Barry had broken into her home, quote, jumped on her, quote, snatched her underwear off, and tried to, quote, penetrate her. So we're talking about some violent, crazy attacks.
Yeah.
CR, who I never got the name for because she was underage, and was the woman that Barry was convicted of, quote, taking indecent liberties with, and was sentenced to the 10 years in prison.
Yeah.
Also testified at this case, saying that there was more than one occasion where he was inappropriate with her. She said that in 1992, he tried to touch her inappropriately when she was 12. And later that same year, he pushed her down, pulled her pants off, and raped her. So, honestly, I think it's amazing that this woman would even testify at this case.
Yeah.
I mean, that must have been terrifying.
Yeah. And this was just a year before that all that happened to her.
Mm-hmm. Prosecutors believe that Janet gave Reed a ride home and then went to the hotel. They didn't think that Janet actually had friends over with her, and they just felt that Robert must have been in that drowsy state where he wasn't really sure and thought he heard something.
Yeah.
She went outside to smoke a cigarette, and by total coincidence, she ran into Thomas. He was most likely high on crack and used a knife to force Janet to have sex with him. He then stabbed her to death. They believe that he left his shoes there because he didn't want people to follow his footprints to the house where he was staying, which was just down the beach a little bit. I wonder, too, if maybe it wasn't intentional to leave the shoes there. Maybe after he committed the crime, he just left. Because if he was high on cocaine or crack cocaine, would he be able to fully process, oh, I'm not going to put my shoes on so that investigators won't be able to find me tomorrow when they follow my tracks to my house?
Yeah, but either way, regardless of if he's wearing shoes or not, there's going to be footsteps.
Tracks. Exactly. So I don't know. And I also think it's interesting that he took the time to take his socks off. And I wonder if that's why they think it happened after the crime, because he wouldn't have been rushing.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think that whole thing is very interesting.
Unless he already had his shoes off. Like, he was just out there that night on the beach, like, high in the ocean.
And she just happened to walk down there. Yeah. Yeah, he could have been down there. Because he wasn't very far away from where his final destination was.
Yeah.
Which was either his aunt's house or his mom's house or his grandma's house, which was just down the beach a little bit. Basically, it seemed to all be, you know, coincidence. This whole case, it was a coincidence that she was even anywhere near him. Stranger on stranger crime at this point in time in Outer Banks was extraordinarily rare. So that was very interesting. It was also a huge coincidence that he had broken his parole just at the time where he would have had his DNA sample plopped into CODIS. Because if it had happened a year earlier,
yeah,
it might not have, you know, his DNA might not have been taken.
How does that work? Like, do they have to search for it, or once they put in a case, like, as DNA samples get updated into CODIS, like, if it happens to hit on that?
It will pop.
Okay.
But his DNA was already in CODIS before they ran the test. During the trial, while Thomas was in his holding cell, he made a statement to a jailer basically saying that he would never be convicted because a woman on the jury was friends with his mother. But he was wrong. The jury did end up convicting him of rape and first-degree murder, but he was able to avoid the death penalty because this particular juror who we had talked about was the one person that refused to put him up for the death penalty.
That's crazy. If he told a jailer that, like, that should have been brought up.
Right.
And she should have been removed.
Exactly. Unfortunately, that was not the case. He did end up being sentenced to 2 life sentences, though, without the possibility of parole. Mm. When the Forensic Files episode was released in 2007, Barry maintained his innocence, saying that he was filing appeals. I found a blog post on mylifeofcrime.com, and this is just some little extra information here, where they were discussing whether or not they believed that he should have gotten the death penalty. One of the commenters said that they believed that he absolutely should have received the death penalty for this crime. But then another one said that he shouldn't. And this commenter said, absolutely, he should not have received the death penalty. And this person claims to be Barry's daughter.
What?
Mm-hmm. They basically say that he shouldn't have gotten the death penalty because while he was in her life, he was a wonderful father. And I think this goes back to you know, other murderers, killers, and rapists, i.e. BTK, who could be a great mother and, a great father. But that doesn't mean that you're not a rapist and a killer.
Right.
And you don't deserve to, you know,
that's like the
get
main,
your sentence.
That's like the main trait of like a sociopath, isn't it? Like basically having a switch, just being able to hide things and have that secret life.
Yeah. And unfortunately, you know, whether he should have gotten the death penalty or not, it just didn't seem like the decision was made by people who were unbiased because of this one juror. So that's unfortunate, but it is fortunate that he did get 2 life sentences and he'll never be out.
Yeah. It's probably for the best.
Yeah. And like I said before, I think this case is kind of amazing because if certain things hadn't stacked up the way that they stacked up, they would have never been able to solve this.
Yeah.
Never. There was no way to connect Thomas if it hadn't been for the DNA. It was a complete stranger-on-stranger crime. Like, they would have never known.
That's got to be tough. And I'm sure there's probably still a lot of cold cases out there like that.
Absolutely. And yeah, cases that happened before DNA and before CODIS that hopefully will one day be solved.
Let's hope so.
Well, that's all I have for you guys. I really hope that you enjoyed this episode. We had a lot of fun writing it. We will be back next Tuesday. Oh, tomorrow, because this is coming out tomorrow, we will be interviewed with Good Pods. And you can check our Instagram for more information on that. That should be really exciting. So definitely go check it out. Please check out our website. We're really excited about it. We've got all of our merch up. I hand make everything, and you'll get a little special gift when you order. So please go check that out and
fill up the carts.
Yep. You can get a discount, 10% off with code COOLCATS right now because Tiger King, you know. Anyway, that's all I've got for you. So we'll see you next Tuesday.
See you guys next week.
Okay, bye.